I'm Steve Gilman, and this is Brand Story, where we help you build stronger, more sustainable brands by sharing insightful conversations with brand leaders, marketers, and professional storytellers. My guest today is Gina Miknovich.
Being a creative does take a lot of courage, and dealing with like the universe, basically with social media, gives you immediate reactions. We have to be agile because you can take something that's even negative feedback and twist it and turn it and refine your campaign.
Gina is the founder, CEO, and chief creative officer of the Craftsman Agency, where she and her team create experiential marketing and immersive storytelling for brands. She's also a Clio Award winner and has done incredible work for clients like Disney, 20th Century Studios, Paramount, Cisco, and so many more. Gina has also co-authored a book called Business Bliss or Co-Founder Chaos, a must-read for anyone considering starting a business with a partner or a family member. I think that's really fascinating. We'll definitely get to that today. Hi, Gina. Welcome to Brand Story.
Hi. It's nice to meet you. And thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, I'm so glad we get to talk. I've obviously done a bunch of work looking into like your content, speeches you've given, other podcasts you've been on, and then also looking at the Craftsman Agency. And it's a lot of fascinating work you've done.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We try.
Yeah, you guys are very successful. And you've done like some really outstanding integrated campaigns and brand activations. It seems like you sort of specialize in that.
Definitely.
Yeah, and it's a really cool type of marketing and brand awareness building. So I wanted to ask you, you know, in 2022, you won a Clio for a home entertainment integrated campaign for Cruella. And I think probably everyone knows that movie. It's got Emma Stone in it. Can you tell me a little bit of what you guys did for that?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, it always, those integrated campaigns always start with some idea that's going to be the center of it. And we originally were thinking that we were going to make a life-size Panther DeVille out of chocolate. And COVID happened and all of these kind of circumstances came up. And so we found this really great artist out of New York that created dolls, 12-inch dolls. And so we were like leaning into the fashion aspect of the film and pulling through that storyline. We decided to do mailers with the costumes. And I mean, when you saw them in person, the images almost didn't do it justice. They looked exactly like the costumes. And we then started to realize that there was really a lot of story behind the how the chocolates were developed, as well as we could send it to influencers and press. And we ended up getting a lot of coverage for Style Catcher. We worked with a PR agency that helped secure all of those. And so we started to realize that we also had a really great story for Disney Eats, because it was chocolate and they were edible and it actually did taste good. So we did basically a behind the scenes post and kind of fun facts, and that was posted on Disney Eats. And then we started to work with costume designers to develop their own version, but we took a different angle and we gave Designer Daddy a little bit of a challenge and said, can you make one that is essentially with only the things that you have in your house? So if you look really closely at the shoulders, it's actually toys that have been painted gold. And then we were talking about doing a makeup artist, and we were like, why don't we do something like the true makeup artists or drag? And so we worked with drag for makeup. And then we just all kind of stitched it together, and the dolls were kind of the center point of it.
That's really cool. I love how collaborative it is.
Our clients tell us this too, is that we really do like to work with other agencies that are part of the ecosystem. Most of our clients have a lot of agencies within the ecosystem and on a certain project. And honestly, the campaigns are better if we all work together.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I love how it seems like you all go in with a really clear idea and a really clear premise of how you're going to pull it off. But then you're flexible enough to be creative during prep and during the campaign so that you're capitalizing on what works and what doesn't. And I think that's a lot of agencies miss that.
Yeah, I actually do a presentation on the art of the pivot. And we talk about how we start with an idea and it ultimately ends up pivoting maybe 2 to 3 times. But it, in the final product is actually great. And nobody knew that you pivoted. We do, because it's a lot of hard work to figure out how to evolve an idea. But honestly, they always become better.
That's pretty cool. That takes a lot of listening.
It does. Isn't that part of our job?
Yeah, it is. You would hope.
Yeah. Yes.
I think there's a lot of agencies that once they get their idea and their brief, and it's like a locomotive going down a track.
Yeah, that's, you can get, and I do have certain ideas that I get in love with, and I really want the client to do it. And sometimes I just cannot convince them to do it. I mean, I have one that I really want to do with a cybersecurity company, and I will pull it off with the right one, I'm sure. But it's, you ultimately, I think, have to realize that the idea is only good to love if the receiving end is also loving it just as much.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about the audience. And I love the idea of like pivoting, during a campaign to make it better, increase acceptance, you're noticing what's going on. I think that also takes a good deal of courage because, it's a little bit of a high wire act because, you're really working with live ammunition with all this stuff. So how do you all manage the pace with that and the create, like you're creating like in real time and you're collaborating with artists? There's a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, first of all, I think agency people have to be able to have a lot of courage. I mean, I think that we are a different breed. I've been brand side and honestly, I think I am an agency person. Like it just, it just happened one day, I guess. But it does take courage. You have to be able to take risks. And one of the benefits of working with an agency is that we do have the courage for our clients. And we also have the expertise and kind of the insight into the audience and what's going to connect with them to really make it happen. And so I think that, I think that being a creative does take a lot of courage and dealing with like the universe basically with social media gives you immediate reactions on your work. And so sometimes it's not how you want it to come out, but that is why we have to be agile because you can take something that's even negative feedback and twist it and turn it and refine your campaign. And it all ends up working out, but you really do have to be listening to the audience and, watching and seeing what they're really responding to.
Yeah, it's an active thing. It's like a conversation. And I have a long time improv background. So everything, all your work and what you do and what you're talking about reminds me of just the tenet of yes and. You're listening to the audience, you're moving forward, you're sort of improvising within a really good structure.
I love that term. And honestly, when you're doing an integrated campaign, you have a set sort of plan that you have, but as you start to get traction, and we've had this with some recent campaigns where you're like, okay, well now we can do this because everything seems to be working so well. So let's add this, let's add budget, let's, add new tactics. And the integrated campaigns, I just believe so strongly that that's the way that you should be going to market because you get this sort of aura and umbrella that just helps boost everything even more. So firm believer in them.
Yeah, I agree with you. I am too. And I love how you all pull in, events and then of course, social media, other types of media and your mix changes, depending on the client and the audience and all the things. And I think that's really the only good way to do this in this day and age because audiences are fragmented and you got to go where they are depending on who they are.
And we market to a lot of audiences like on, the B2B side or the high tech side that actually hate marketing. And so they tend to be elusive. They've got ad blockers. And so sometimes the only way you're going to get in front of them is to have some activation or stunt that is going to be right in front of them where we know they're going to be. And, sometimes that social is helping, but, more and more we're seeing that a lot of our audiences are starting to spend less time there.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot. And social platforms, super easy to scroll by stuff. Those in real life activations are super powerful. They can boost each other, but, real experience, I kind of feel like with the rise of AI and everything we've got going on and just the absolute you know, avalanche of media that hits all of us every day. It's those personal, real experiences that people super remember.
AI might be another day, another topic for sure.
Yeah, we'll get into that some other time. So you all have done a ton of campaigns for home entertainment releases, which is really unique in the marketing world. You know, there's a ton of marketers that never come near the topics that you all are tackling. And I think it's really unique and fun and very, very challenging, I'm sure. But you've done, you know, integrated campaigns for like movies like The Eyes of Tammy Faye, Wes Anderson's French Dispatch, The Lion King, you know, Little Mermaid. So, you know, these were all very different audiences and very different tones and very different images. How do you as the creative director and the creative team, you know, what's your process to come up with an idea that fits all these disparate subjects?
Oh, it's not linear. That is for sure.
Well, that makes sense.
I mean, it's like if anybody's ever in my brain, it is not a linear process for sure. You know, I think that we do theatrical too, but home entertainment's kind of interesting because people have already seen the film, right? And so you can tell a little bit more of the story and you can share a little bit more than you can in theatrical. Theatrical, you're always trying to keep a little bit of mystery. But that's why we also like some of the home entertainment campaigns, because they do push the kind of the envelope, because you have to keep interest in the film when, you know, everyone's fickle and it's only about the last movie that's in the theater. So when we get into a film, I mean, most of the time, well, it does help to see it. That always helps me.
Yeah, right. A lot of ideas come from there.
Yeah. So like Strange World, I went and saw the film. It's kind of a running joke in my house because my daughter won't go see an animated film most of the time anymore. So I'm like the person without my kid.
Sitting in a theater by yourself. Yeah. Yeah. That's all right. Yeah. You're working.
Yeah. But honestly, when I saw that film, like I had just been to Japan and gone to Team Labs. And so there was this one room that had all of these huge balls. And I was like, that, it just really seems a lot like the film. There's like a scene in the film. And I was like, if we could create that, that would be cool. And so when we did that campaign, we actually ended up partnering with Caton's Children's Museum, and that was a really great space. And we were originally going, the idea really did start that we were going to make the space. Well, it turns out that like little toddlers with big balls might not be so great and they might squish the kids. So
maybe a safety issue.
Yeah. So that was a good example of a pivot. That still was very, very successful. But those ideas come from a lot of times being in the world, looking at art, doing a lot of research, kind of getting into the, you know, into the head of the film.
I think you did a great job, because I think it's so complex. There's no way to really explain it. I think it's interesting just listening to you talk about it, because inspiration comes from so many different places. And whether you're doing theatrical or whether you're doing, you know, some sort of home video release or, you know, that kind of thing, or an in real life brand activation, or in the B2B space, the inspiration is going to come from somewhere, but it's just the fact that you're willing to almost like zoom in on something and find something that's a seed of an idea inside whatever the piece of entertainment is or whatever the connection might be. Yeah, that's pretty cool. You know, creatives are odd people. And I always love talking to creatives. I'm one myself. I think it's really fun. You know, everyone's gets ideas in different ways. So I think some are probably harder than others or more challenging than others. You all did something. It's a brand partnership between Cisco Duo and Marvel Studios Guardians of the Galaxy. That's not something that you immediately think of. I think that one's really cool, because those are two very different things. You know, so how did you get the idea to put these two things together?
And I will tell you, this was 3 years of stubbornness bringing this idea to Cisco, just not letting go of the fact that I felt like Marvel's stories fit so well with Cisco's story. And finally, it all just kind of matched up. And the Guardians, the title, when that was, when Marvel brought that title up and we were having a discussion, I was like, the Guardians are guarding the galaxy and Cisco Duo is guarding data and, you know, IT infrastructures and people's devices and people's identities. And so it's like that storyline is very powerful and it, you can have a lot of fun with it. And we did really pull that campaign off in a very, very short period of time, which was a little stressful. It was about 3.5 weeks. And that was, it was pretty intense. But it's because we really did have to continue to kind of sell the idea within, within, you know, Cisco that it was going to achieve the results. And the one thing about Marvel is Marvel wants butts and seats for opening weekend. They want a big box office and they want a lot of impressions and they want a lot of engagement. Cisco, you know, we work with a performance marketing team. And so they want like, they want the awareness because that helps your performance marketing, but they want like form fills and those kinds of things. So that's a very complex, like opposite objectives you have to try to bring together. And I think that that's why we're good with brand partnerships is we do figure out like, how can we do that integrated campaign that is going to kind of like meet everyone's needs?
Yeah. You know, so that they both benefit and see the benefit. I think you all did a really clever, cool thing with that.
Thank you.
You know, that whole, they don't run from the unexpected and the safety and the security angle. I think you really pulled it off. It's really original and it looked really difficult and I can't believe you did it in 3.5 weeks. That's insane.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it was, I mean, I definitely have gray hairs that I cover up.
That's just insane. So, you know, one of the aspects of what you all do as an agency that I think is really unique is you do brand activations, which are essentially events. And events are really difficult and so many marketers do them badly. I mean, we've both been to bad events, you know, and I'm not, you know, giving anybody a hard time out there, but for the people listening, I think getting some event advice from you would be amazing because your all's events, from what I've read and the clips I've seen and the descriptions I've seen, they are tight. So you have some guiding principles around events and you have some ways you come at doing events. Can you just speak to that a little bit?
You know, I mean, really, I'm always thinking when I go to an event, what will I actually do? Because to get me to do something in an activation is kind of tough. And you would think it wouldn't be because I come up with ideas all the time, right? But I really want to make sure there's payoff for the user. I'm always thinking about what is that experience? You know, what is making it seamless and the most enjoyable for the person that's attending the event. But then there's also the aspect of having, you know, things that are kind of unexpected. Some of those magical moments that you just don't, you know, you don't think are going to be there. And then all of a sudden you come around the corner and then there's this really, really cool thing. It always is also about a story. Like, how are we telling this story across, you know, across the different activations. So Strange World was really all about Splat. Splat was this character that, you know, was kind of beloved. And, you know, you just had all of these aspects. It was also about sustainability and some of those things. And so having those teaching moments, as well as some of the really having slime, which felt like Splat, you know, those things were kind of brought joy and it was really, really fun watching kids, you know, from like a B2B tech, I mean, honestly, or working like with Booz Allen, which is B2G government.
Yeah. It's pretty dry,
but you know what? That team is fantastic because they do a lot of advanced things in AR VR. So bringing Beat Saber to South by Southwest was, you know, was fantastic. And the other thing it did is that people stood in line and it was sticky. And that's where the t-shirts, where you create these really cool t-shirts, you know, don't just put a logo on it, create something that really is tied to your theme and that people really want to wear.
Yeah. I think the way you all keep, you know, the the customer experience or the attendee experience or whoever, you keep it top of mind in everything you choose to do. And I think that's where event marketers or marketers in general, when they're involved in the small or big events, they forget that the event isn't for them and for the executives or for anything. It's 100% for the attendees, and an experience is from the moment you walk up till the moment you leave. So how do you approach things like that holistically like that?
I mean, it really is just really thinking about, I mean, a lot of it's from attending a lot of bad events, like you were talking about. It's like having all of those things, like what are the things that are annoying? Or when you're at an event like South by Southwest, your phone is always running out of a charge. And so, you know, because you're using social, you're communicating on text to where you're going to the next, you know, to the next activation or session. And so, you know, having the recharge room for Booz Allen was because you're always, always looking for a plug. And so, you know what, we are going to give you a place to plug in and also decompress. So it's trying to really think about, like, from a human perspective, finding food, like, you know, just having like all of those things that, that just maybe looking at almost like basic needs. So you kind of and maybe charging our phones is a basic need now.
It is in that situation. You know, it really what you're talking about is hospitality in a lot of ways too.
It is.
You know?
Yeah.
Have you read the book Unreasonable Hospitality by Will Gadara?
No, I haven't.
He was on our podcast. I think it's one of the best books about brand, even though it's not a book about brand, that you can ever read. He opened 11 Madison Park, founded it, best restaurant in the world 2 years in a row. Yeah. And their attention to detail reminds me a little of your approach to events. Because I've seen you write about and, you know, people talk about how your events are down to the minute tracked and planned for the day of the event. And it's that like passion for detail while also making it about someone else, like the attendee, that I think is really special. So how do you get your staff on board with that kind of like granular approach?
You know, we we have the best team.
That helps.
It does really help. And I think fundamentally they care. And, you know, when it really comes down to it, we care about the details because we care about the outcome. We want a positive outcome for everybody that's going to be at the event, but ultimately our client has to meet their business objectives too. So all of our ideas, they're going to get our clients' objectives. And sometimes that is getting like contact information, but we do it a little bit like you're very willing to give it because we're going to give you something in return that is going to make it. And then we're going to promise not to, you know, barrage you with like a bunch of emails and irritate you, because I also think that the follow-up in an event can be really annoying.
Sure can it?
It can. And right now I'm receiving an email. I did not attend South by this year. I think I'll probably go back in 2025, but I keep getting an email about thank you for attending.
Yeah, isn't that annoying? I got that too.
It's so annoying. You didn't even know that I wasn't there.
They're just like spamming their list with a thank you. It's just, I mean, it really makes a terrible impression.
It does. It really does. And I, you know, I think that's where it goes down. The devil's in the detail. Like, you know, all of your during the experience, you have to have all the detail. But going back to the team, the team just really cares. And that, you know, when we try to say that as a value prop, you know, we're trying to pitch a new client, people are like, yeah, right. Like, you know, it's like, it's really hard. And we're just like, let us prove it to you. And, you know, the devil is in the details. Events are all about the little details.
They are. I mean, that's absolutely true. Yeah. Another reason I think you would absolutely connect and love that book is that he has a concept called one size fits one. That basically is a way to talk about, like, you know, each person you can't spam with a thanks for being at the conference when they weren't there. It's about what they're doing. It's not about what you want, you know? So I think that's really cool. You know, the next thing I want to talk to you about, it's like perfect segue, is customer experience. Because, you know, even when you're doing an activation or you're doing an integrated campaign, I think, you know, just from looking at your work, you can really see you all have a deep passion for just, you know, customer experience as a competitive advantage. If someone has a good experience, I think what they're like 67% or 7 times more likely to keep coming back or something like that. It's crazy. Can you speak to that? I know you talk about this a lot. Can you speak to that a little bit?
I do. And, you know, it's interesting because I think customer experience is probably something that impacts your brand aura for good or bad more than people give it credit for. And it doesn't have to be a physical experience for sure. I mean, there's the four seasons where you're always going to have amazing service. And it's, you know, and honestly, when they fail you, they make it up to you. They really do make you feel like it is important and you are, you know, that one person that they care about. But it's also just dealing with people from a customer experience, like how you do outreach to them, like, you know, how your website works, the e-commerce experience, how seamless is it? How easy do I make everything? Do I remove friction from all of my interactions with that brand? And I think that customer experience is so important because it does keep you coming back. There's a reason that I go to Target and not Walmart. You know, it's like, I like the experience better at Target. Now you might be a Walmart shopper and you might like being greeted by, you know, somebody and that, but the rest of the store, I don't find it to be, you know, quite the experience as a Target. So I think that if you care about experience, you can help brands, you know, make better experiences. And that is when it comes right down to it is, I really do think about all of the levels and layers of an experience. And I feel that some of those are marketing, some of those are finance, some of those are, you know, how you just run your business fundamentally.
I mean, it's brand, but I think it's the chief driver of loyalty is experience. You know, like we all think of the brands we love. And if we love them, maybe we've forgiven them for a transgression here and there if they recovered well, like you said, you know. But in general, it's about how they make you feel. And it's about if you feel like they see you and you feel like they've got your back in some way, you know, whether it's with their product or if it's an experiential brand like a hotel or a restaurant, it's got to be how you feel about it, you know. And we are emotional beings through and through. So that's how we're going to decide if we like brands or not. Just like how we like people.
Right. I mean, it's exactly right. And I think a lot of times people forget that you're marketing to a human. And I'm always like, you know, we're not marketing to robots.
Yeah. We're not marketing to a demographic, you know?
Yes.
These people are not a monolith. Each person is a different person, you know? And it's maddeningly difficult.
Well, I was going to say, and also like a lot of times that there's the demographic aspect, but then people will be like, okay, you know, how are we going to go after that based on generation and based on age? And I'm like, if you come at me like my age, I am 100% not going to buy your product.
Yeah, I agree.
It is not going to work for you.
Yeah. I mean, you have to do it. You know, people, you know, belong to certain tribes or they belong to certain activities that they love and it's part of their identity. You can come at them that way, but how they segment in that is crazy. I mean, I'm a huge fan of music festivals, but I'm not the age demographic for music festivals.
Right. But you still probably spend a lot there.
Yeah, I do. And I love them and I go to them and I love new music. And it's not the average thing for my age group. So they're not going to market to me like that. But the really good ones just treat me like you love music.
Yes.
Which is what, that's what I'm all about for those, you know? And then I respond to that. So I think when people try to use demographics and psychographics, a lot of times it's sort of a ham-handed try to put people in a box and it's not a very easy thing to do.
No, it's not.
Doesn't work much.
And I think maybe all of the targeting and the ability to use that targeting almost made marketers a little bit lazy because you'd luck out probably half of the time where you'd actually get to the person, but you weren't getting there because of the targeting. I think you're getting there because you had something relevant for that person on the other side.
That's a great point. It's something emotionally relevant for the person on the other side. I think, you know, we've certainly as marketers been through a ton of change and and, you know, trends. And I think the performance marketing, while it's powerful, has done a lot of harm, as much harm as good, you know, because sometimes you just need to build raw brand awareness and then appeal to people emotionally. And that isn't a click.
It isn't.
You know? So it's, and, you know, I love that you all are story first. I think that's great.
I mean, it's story and audience first, right? I mean, those are, how can you connect? And honestly, stories connect you. That, you know, it's, and if you could tell the story in a different way that's really unexpected, I think, you know, people want to engage with it. That's why games work. That's why, you know, that's why video is so powerful. And that's why a brand partnership with the Guardians was a great way to tell the story.
Yeah. Well, it made me remember it. And I can't say I'd walk around thinking about Cisco Duo or know what it is. But the second you all put it with Guardians, like whether I like it or not, now I remember it.
Yeah.
You know? And I might not be the intended audience, but if I was, I would definitely remember it.
I mean, the thing about Duo is that everybody really does need to protect their data, even if it's just an individual. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's so cool. So something I wanted to make sure I get to ask you about, because I think it's really unique, is you wrote a book called Business Bliss or Co-Founder Chaos with a friend of yours, Lynn Julian. And you guys co-authored it because you both kind of, you know, went through the school of hard knocks about founding a business with a friend or a business partner. Can you speak a little bit about that? Because I think this book is really unique. I started reading it and I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. First of all, it is very hard to co-author because I will say that I'm really proud of Lynn and I, and honestly, Lynn really pushed us forward. But we both figured out that we were, you know, in COVID, we were writing a book on the same topic. And so we were like, well, this might be kind of fun. And then we decided to do it together. Even though we both had, you know, little breakups or big breakups with our co-founders. But we had so many similarities. And then we decided to interview people. And as we interviewed people, we realized there are a lot of things that you fundamentally do wrong when you set up with a friend or a family member, partly because I think you always think it's going to be hearts and rainbows and flowers and it's all going to stay the same, and it doesn't. And there are ways to do it so that you set up the right structure that you can be protected if someone changes their mind, be protected if someone isn't doing their job. Just because you found a company doesn't mean that you should be employed at it. And so it's, you know, it's, I think, and then taking the whole adage of like dating to getting married to divorcing and getting remarried, that whole sort of way to tell the story, I think made it a little bit entertaining as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's a really interesting topic that no one thinks about, and they, man, talk about something that should be in every business school.
There is not a book on this topic.
There's nothing. And I was fascinated, you know, this is our 29th year in business and I founded this, but also, you know, early on there were some other people involved. So I can relate to a lot of your book. And I think there's a ton of business people that only find this out by having it blow up in their face or having to figure out how to get out of it. When, and you know, the levels of messiness, I'm sure, go from kind of messy to unbelievably horrible.
Oh, yes.
I know, right? But it's never taught. It's never talked about. And, you know, especially in entrepreneurship circles, like people are always like, yeah, be an entrepreneur, do whatever you, and then, you know.
And, oh, just do a co-founder. Everybody co-founds,
everyone,
right?
Loves that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like getting two family members to talk about money, you know? Like,
yes.
That always works.
Founding a company with someone and having to talk about money is also, you know, I mean, that is just, I mean, when it comes down to it, money is the issue, right?
Yeah, usually.
When we did research, we were like, how could people not be writing about this? There's plenty of books on divorce, like for like regular marriages.
But none for business.
None for business. And so we, I think the book will start to get traction. It's been really hard, like really marketing it at this point, you know, but it's like, everybody that we talk to that does a lot of consulting for small business, they're like, everybody needs this that has a co-founder.
This is the first thing I thought, like, everyone needs it as a, so I lecture to entrepreneur classes and groups, and I'm going to start recommending it.
Oh my gosh, that's so nice. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, we have a bunch of authors. I think we've had like 12 or 15 authors, and some launch their books on our podcast. And so we'll make it a part of your story for this too and put it on the landing page because I think it's invaluable. You know, dreams die sometimes in these situations just because people didn't think ahead or they, like you said, they thought it'd be all hearts and rainbows. And sometimes it's not money. Sometimes it's vision.
That's a really good point. And friendships end because of it. And that is, you know, that is a real, real shame. You know, it is a lot about vision. It's about what you, you know, what you want to be. And ultimately, you know, when the Craftsman came to me from an idea perspective, I was going through this period of time as we were kind of breaking up. And, you know, I think the Craftsman, I could kind of see the future and sort of the light at the end of the tunnel and just wanting to go in that direction so much. But it was painful. The process was painful, and a lot of it was vision. Like, I really directionally wanted to go more into the Craftsman, and I wanted us to be just who we are becoming, you know? So it's, and I wanted to work on very different things. I didn't want to just work on what was coming to us. I wanted to be able to say, no, that really isn't a good fit for us, but here we have another partner, and that's what we do now is we... If it's something that really isn't in our sweet spot, we give them another resource.
Yeah, I think that happens a lot in agency work and other businesses too, is it comes down to vision of what you will and what you won't do. And whether, you know, oh, we do everything. If you come in the door with money, we're good. And I early on had some of the same exact kind of things. I'm like, I'll do that kind of work. I won't do this kind of work. You know, because you have to wake up in the morning and look at yourself in the mirror. And we just won't market things we don't believe in.
Yeah. There's certainly products that we won't market.
I mean, you just get to the point where you're like, nah.
Yeah. You know? No, thanks.
Thanks. So good for you. I think anyone listening, please look for the book. We'll have a link on the landing page. And it is really an excellent book. I love how you all put it together. You did a great job.
Thank you. Really appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. It's really a strong book. And I think it's so needed. So just some quick questions before I let you go. I don't want to keep you all afternoon. This has been such a fun conversation, by the way.
It has been. Thank you so much.
I'm not having a blast talking with you. So what's a trait of yours that you used to think was a weakness that you've learned to value now?
Stubbornness.
That's great. That's a great answer. I love it. Can you explain that a little bit?
It is stubbornness that made me kept going back to Duo and being like, we need to do this with Marvel. Like, there are some ideas that I just don't let die because I know it will work for their audience. And there, so I would say stubbornness is also like during COVID, it was stubbornness that kept us alive. You know, I wasn't going to let this global pandemic, where we were doing lots of theatrical work at that point, I wasn't going to let it kill us.
I honestly can relate to that one because I think to be a founder and to be successful, you know, and we've been doing this a long time, there are moments where I'm just incredibly stubborn and I just will keep moving forward no matter what. And I think it takes that. You have to care that much, you know?
Yeah, it does. I mean, we had a board of advisors and I was pitching the idea of, you know, starting the Craftsman and just evolving. The board of advisors was like, no. And it was stubbornness that I was like, you know what? I think
sorry.
I actually have customer and client feedback that this is a good idea.
Yeah. So yes.
Yeah. So I no longer have a board of advisors.
Well, you know, you probably didn't need them. All right. Two more questions. What would you name this chapter of your life?
I'll call it the magical era.
I like that.
Yeah. Because I feel like I get up and I get to do this job that I love. And I'm always asked, like, you know, not that I'm close to retirement, but like, when do you think you're going to retire? And I'm like, honestly, I mean, if I'm still having fun and I'm still doing the kinds of campaigns I'm doing now, it's going to be a long time.
Yeah. Why would I? Yeah, I feel the exact same way. I love what I get to do.
Yeah. It's like, I get up and I'm like, I get to do this. and I get paid to do this. This is really, really killer. And I get to work with brands like Disney and Cisco and Paramount and NBC and, you know, so fun.
And why would you walk away from that? Especially when you get to control it and you actually honestly enjoy it. So I think the magical era, that's a pretty good answer, because I'm happy for you. I think it's so great when people land in a situation at a time where they really love doing what they're doing.
Thank you.
So one last question. If you could give your younger self any advice, what would it be?
I would have told myself to not be so hard on myself.
Well, that's great advice.
I wrecked my, like, if I had a misstep or a failure, I would just flog myself for, you know, weeks. And I can be a bit of a perfectionist, probably a shocker. And so I think I was just way too hard on myself, and it honestly really impacted my confidence. And so, you know, getting to that place where you are happy with who you are as a person, I mean, maybe that's part of why it's the magical era as well.
Yeah. I mean, when you're showing up for yourself and, you know, giving yourself a pep talk and being your own friend, it's hard to get there, you know, and especially for people who are driven and might be perfectionist. But yeah, good for you. And I think I always like to ask that question because you're a very accomplished person. You're incredibly successful. Your work is amazing. So people can learn from you. And honestly, if anyone takes anything away from this episode, I hope it's that, you know. So if you're out there listening in and you're young in your marketing career, please take that advice. Don't be so hard on yourself. You know, I had a guest say, like, this isn't brain surgery. No one's going to die when we get it wrong. You know,
we have a client that's always like, we're not curing cancer here, guys.
Yeah. Let's just try hard and do the best we can, but let's not freak out. Hey, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It was really fun. I appreciated it.
Yeah. I had a blast talking with you, and I really appreciate you being on the podcast, and I hope I get to connect and talk with you again soon. Want to hear more inspiring stories? Subscribe on your preferred podcast app so you don't miss an episode. And if you like what we're doing, please rate, review, and share. It's the best way to support us. Thank you for listening to Brand Story.